Captain America throws his mighty shield. All those who chose to oppose his shield must yield. If he's led to a fight and a duel is due, then the red and the white and the blue will come through when Captain America throws his mighty shield.
Man, I love that song. Welcome to another exciting edition of Nonproductive's Near Mint Comic Movie Review Extravaganza. Copyrighted TM, Nonproductive, a registered trademark of Blexco.
Woo!
I'm sorry, that was a little much. Hi, I'm Frank. I'm joined in studio, as often, by Al. Hi, Al.
Hi.
Cappy. Hi, Cappy.
Woo!
Big Papa Pete. Hi, Big Papa Pete.
What? Oh, I'm sorry. I was too busy being hip and awesome listening to the Captain America theme song from the 60s.
All right. Well, and also Nate.
Nonconformist.
Hi. Hi, I'm the cool one.
Yes, right. She is new to the cast. How you doing, Nate? Our special guest member who is here to give us opinions.
Yes, and thank you.
I mimed clapping. I didn't intentionally mind clapping, but it caused everyone to start clapping, which was really appropriate.
We are
really
cheap.
Appropriate.
So I'm good. That's great. That's wonderful. The subject matter of today's exciting episode, which you probably could tell from looking at the graphics or reading the bio or whatever.
Oh my God, I didn't even see that.
We have a bio. It's right there.
Look at that.
Civil
really
War.
Well put together.
Captain America Civil War, the latest Marvel blockbuster hit, opened up just recently, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. And as is non-pro tradition, we are going to dissect the hell out of this film in a way that you will hopefully find entertaining. This is going to be a movie review, so we're going to talk about the movie, and we expect you have already seen it or don't care at all about it and for some reason are very interested in our opinions about the film, so you're only listening to the audio and not watching the film. Whatever way you want to slice and butter your bread is fine with us, but do not complain to us in the comments of this here podcast.
Yay, bread.
You have been warned.
That's right. All right, so let's get right into it. Opening thoughts on this film. I'm going to share that I was shocked and pleasantly surprised at how well they executed everything that they were going to try to do with this major storyline. Civil War is a big deal in the comic continuity, and they did a very good job of it, I think. Al?
I feel like this movie had a ton of stuff it had to accomplish. It had a lot of balls in the air. And in comparison to Age of Ultron, which kind of tripped itself out the gate and spent most of the movie trying to recover from it, this one I feel like had like spot on pacing and accomplished so much in one film almost effortlessly.
All right.
Al, you ignorant slut.
True.
True.
I'm going to have to disagree with you a little bit on that. I enjoyed the movie, but I think there were some pretty bad pacing errors, pacing problems, particularly in the first act. I thought it dragged. But I think they nailed the characterizations. I was very impressed with that.
All right.
You know, I thought it was a fantastic movie, and Winter Soldier is currently my favorite Marvel movie. This one's quite up there. I have to let it settle a bit first before I give it a number. But I think it would have been more appropriate as an Avengers movie than as a Captain America movie.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. I'd like to hear more about that.
Yeah,
and Cappy.
I can definitely feel that. I also felt the pacing was a little weird. I thought it wrapped up really quickly at the end. And some of the fight scenes I felt kind of lacked suspense. I don't know.
Wow.
What suspense?
So, you didn't like the movie?
Oh, I love the movie. It was fantastic.
You loved the movie?
I very much enjoyed the movie.
Did you love it or very much enjoy the movie?
Oh my God, he's pedaling backwards.
I liked
you,
the
politician.
Movie. The movie was a good movie.
You are movie? Not coming. All right.
He can't even bring himself to say the name of the movie.
Look at him. Monster.
There you go.
All right, you're going to be laughed at every comic book store from here till Kalamazoo.
Timbuktu.
I don't know.
Okay, which one was better, Captain America Civil War or Ken Burns Civil War?
Yeah.
That's not fair.
I know they're so similar.
It's not fair.
It's pretty much the same beats.
What? Yeah.
What?
Ken Burns' pacing was, you know, spot on, I think.
Oh, yeah.
That was action, action, action for all 13 hours.
Yeah, and the twist ending. All right. So,
Lincoln? Oh, my God.
I can't believe.
I did not see that coming.
Lincoln.
Who would have thought? John Wilkes Booth.
Speaking of Lincoln, just as a brief aside, since we did used to do our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Recap show, very little Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the movie. Kind of like it fits within the universe, but for those of you who are voting for 20-minute, you know, monologue from character Lincoln from season 3 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you are probably the actor who portrays Lincoln. because nobody else was asking for that.
Correct.
So, mm-hmm. That was not worth it. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the film. Cappy, you mentioned that some of the scenes, the big scenes, specifically the fight scenes, were a little lackluster. I think you're full of crap, but you're going to have your chance to argue against that. I actually believe they were some of the most, like, it is a spectacle movie, and they delivered on the spectacle. I love those fight scenes. I don't know if we should start with that. Maybe we should begin with the first big conflict, which was the wandering through the city. Where were they?
Nigeria.
They were in Nigeria. I want to say, yeah, I almost said Wakanda, but that was like a sly.
When you describe your fight scene as wandering through, I think that's automatically speaking a little bit more than you plan to about the pacing of this fight.
All right, so that I think that was I did not use the correct word. I actually thought that the parkouring through Nigeria to beat the hell out of each other with a robot eagle thing was great. I thought it was like some classic.
It struck me as a very strong start. There wasn't a lot of talking or like obsessive plot right then. It was just, what's going on? Oh, we're fighting, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm in favor of it. What did you think, Al? Well,
I thought it was a very good scene setter in the same way Winter Soldier set up. It was we have a villain that we're gonna have for the first scene of the movie. He's a threat to Cap as he should be, and you know, the heroes have to dispatch a biochemical weapon,
right?
And do the best they can. Yeah, and it leads into the catalyst of the rest of the film.
And it introduces things on the fly. You can just read from context that they are a team. They do this all the time.
Really thoroughly introduce the characters by their actions and the way they interact with each other without a lot of the describing who they are.
Right. I didn't see a Falcon and Captain America going, "We're good friends now. Yeah. We rely on one another a lot." Yes, that is true.
Very much show, don't tell.
Right.
I think turning Red Wing from an actual Falcon to a drone made perfect sense, and I hate it.
Oh,
I miss Red Wing the bird.
Oh,
well,
sorry.
At least you acknowledge it makes perfect sense.
Yes.
I'm almost in the same camp as you. Like, I'm like, oh, the bird would have been nice, but it doesn't make any sense.
I can truly sympathize.
And the fact that Falcon, we'll talk about this in characterizations a little later, but Falcon tries to get Black Widow to talk to
nice
the
bird. Nice little call out.
Yeah.
I like that.
I really enjoy
it. He's cute. Come on, pet him.
Yeah. I really do like, I want to talk about the action pieces because there are a couple different ones. So the people who do Captain America movies or Winter Soldier and this movie are primarily, like, they've done action movies, they've done, like, thriller films, the Russos. Mm-hmm. So, and then you could definitely feel it. That could have been a scene from a Jason Bourne movie or a James Bond movie, especially one of the later ones that had more, you know, again, parkour. well, more parkour and less, like, judo, 70s judo, where he's like, hi-ya, and kind of karate, and then people fall down. There's, you could hear this in podcast land, you could see what I'm doing.
Oh my gosh.
Judo barely, chop!
I'm not moving below my waist at all, I'm just doing a chop, and then the person falls down.
Oh my god, you've been in production meetings for Iron Fist, haven't you?
Imagine if they're like, all right, he's so good at martial arts, he doesn't have to practice any martial arts. He just comes out there, fist in front, and he charges people. I do think those scenes were like really well done, but I've heard complaints about pacing. So does anyone want to come in and tell me why that would be an issue? Or is it not the pacing of the fight scenes that bothered you?
It's not so much the pacing of the fight scenes that bothered me. It was the fact that, you know, we'll get a quick blast of action and then, you know, 40 minutes or so of this, oh, maybe we shouldn't have had so much action. No, the level of action wasn't that bad. It was how responsible you were with where the action was happening. I don't know. I don't think we should really be the ones worrying about that. We're doing good stuff.
I never even thought about
this. Yeah, but people need us to do good stuff, but we have to be accountable. Because, like, sometimes bad stuff happens when we're doing good stuff.
See, I'm...
No, shut up.
Oh, good. Let's lead this podcast with 20 minutes of Pete droning.
Our own Civil War in here.
I'll prove my own point, damn it.
Go on.
It really did have two climaxes, though.
Don't you always?
Just sit there
lucky
for a while.
You.
Are we working blue?
No. Al, what were you saying about anything?
I feel like Pete's opinion of the pacing of the film isn't so much the pacing of the film. I think he just doesn't... I correct me if I'm wrong here, but I feel like the argument they put forth or whatever about the Sokovian Accords and everything is just not to your taste. And then
No. I had no idea. It was the over-discussing it.
Really? Because, really?
Or not even, there was no debating it, really.
I think the big problem is they didn't actually describe it.
Yeah.
They did. They told us, like, this does this, but they didn't actually tell us a lot about the Sokovian Accords other than, they're going to tell us what to do now. Okay, well, what are the bylaws saying you have to?
I'm going
to
agree with Nate on that, but I'm also going to, like, I'm going to asterisk that, saying that if they did, I would have Pete's opinion of the pacing.
Yeah, like, it would have been potentially really boring, but it also left me a little bit confused sometimes when they were arguing, like, I'm not exactly entirely sure what the ramifications of the Accords will be.
I feel like that's an interesting point, and it's a point I've heard before, and it's about the movie Inception, where they talk about, like, where does that technology come from? And I feel like, yeah, it's an argument, and it's a question, but... it's a question or a thing they would have had to have addressed just to the slow down the film, or possibly not necessarily the detriment of it, but to essentially give it the pacing problems I didn't find it actually having.
I think the problem I had more was when they're discussing their points of view here, mm-hmm. you know, you got Cap and Iron Man sitting there calmly talking about it and maybe a little bit of a grumble. There's no point when they're like eye to eye, nose to nose, saying, no, you're wrong about this.
Yeah.
You know, if they had punctuated it with a little bit more, you know, you and I can never come to terms on this, and less, oh, well, you know, I mildly disagree with you.
I find that there was definitely a scene like that. Oh, go ahead, AJ.
Well, I also feel like, yes, I think if they put in the specifics of the Accord, it would have slowed down the movie too much, but... without putting any of them in, it makes Cap seem 100% inflexible. Like he almost like he just didn't even read it, you know? Because he's not throwing out any specifics when he's objecting to it. He almost feels like he's objecting to the concept.
Right.
He's objecting to the very proposal that he should have any limits whatsoever. And it makes him sound somewhat childish.
But he is actually doing exactly what you're describing.
But he read it.
Right,
yeah.
but he's still objecting to the whole entire point of it to begin with. Because you're not wrong. What you're saying is exactly what he's doing.
And I understand his motives, but he comes across as childish and dismissive.
All right, so I have this is really super fascinating for me for a couple of reasons. There's a lot of weird things happening here. In movies, we have to rely on some sort of shorthand to keep the film length, you know, to keep the action going. How dull would it be if they stopped and they read the Accords?
Oh,
you
know? No, absolutely.
On a scale of 1 to the Phantom Menace?
I'm really glad they didn't sit down and read us the Accords,
right.
But I did not realize that Captain America's real problem with the Accords until halfway through the film was that they weren't, like, going to be potentially allowed to say no to a mission. That hadn't even really occurred to me.
I'm not even sure if that is true. So, actually, my full point is, not only does you have to rely on these shortcuts, but it's like, it's a balancing act, because Phantom Menace mentions trade federations, and it's the only thing people remember about the movie when they talk about how terrible it is. So imagine how much this film could have been bogged down with the, oh my god, UN resolution number 478, who even gives a crap? So what they do is they create these shortcuts, and the shortcuts we had in the film is you saw a bunch of people die, innocent people get killed. Mm-hmm. So it shows that Tony's got a point, some regulations should happen. You see that that there, like, there's a bunch of a reading off of all the horrible things that happened in the last few Avengers movies. So another bullet on the, I understand that Tony has a point. Maybe General Ross is in favor of it and he's a bad guy, kind of.
Yeah.
So that's shorthand for you should be wary about this. And in fact, Captain America brings this up, I think, later on in the movie, or somebody does, that... I think, doesn't that happen? Did I imagine that? No.
No, go on.
Somebody mentions that it's like, Ross is not necessarily the kindest person to be delivering this message.
Yeah, no, I do remember
and
that.
And then Captain America is against it, and he's a good guy. And that's another
piece of
there
are
a lot of really appropriate shortcuts and shortcuts and things like
that. But I don't know if it's good enough. I agree that I'm iffy about whether that was good enough.
I can't tell what I think would have been done better, but I think maybe just a little bit more on what the Accords actually were, so I'm not realizing 3/4 of the way through the movie what the problem is.
Right.
Like, oh, okay. No, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I feel like they summarized. I feel like you're right. Maybe just mentioning, like, if they had brought up an example, like if Cap bringing up his argument of if they tell us to do this, like we have to go, him actually opening it up, pointing at something and saying, it says right here, if they tell us where to go, we have to do it.
Yeah. I don't need that, but if that argument had taken place instead of after the Black Panther chase scene.
Yeah.
If that
really
had taken place in the boardroom with General Ross.
That would have been much more
appropriate. Or just after Ross left.
Right.
But they did actually. Him bringing up that subject happened before Black Panther and all that.
Well, hold on. But we shouldn't rehash the movie scene by scene.
Right.
It's interesting that these points exist.
Yeah.
And I think actually we're going to talk about it later on when we talk about like whose team you're on and the differences between the comic and the movie is you'll actually see how some of these do kind of materialize, but maybe not as well for other people. For specifically, the bullet for me is Wanda's house arrest. Right.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit more about the bigger scene. So I actually love the cool. For me, it's the fighting scenes. I'll admit, I know not everybody agrees with that, but I like the parkour fighting scene in the opening. I like the tragedy of the explosions and the newsreel footage. I thought that was really cool. And then I think the next big block is. I think Black Panther's introduction was pretty awesome.
That was fantastic.
Car chases. I hate car chases in movies. I always fall asleep. I was awake this whole time. I guess all you needed was a costumed vigilante.
And I
love cats. Cats make everything better.
And I love Cap fighting all these soldiers, but trying not to hurt them.
I found that very hard to buy. That man had a concussion. That man isn't like, moving.
That man's head through a wall. Yeah.
He is not doing well after this.
Not feeling it, my friend.
And I guess if we're going to talk about big delivery scenes, we're going to have to talk about the payoff of our heroes facing off to one another.
You mean the airport scene?
The airport fight.
Yeah.
I think of all spectacle films, I think that scene was probably the longest, most fun I've ever had during a spectacle. Like, I don't know why. I guess because it was a trailer in front of the movie. Independence Day in the 90s hit mind. And, you know, you remember all the monuments blowing up. But, like, it's like a split second of the film. And I don't know how significant it is, even though it's a clip you would use.
Right.
Right? In the Academy Awards, if they were ever that
cool. They weren't going
cool.
to.
No.
Yeah.
but, like, what other spectacle movies? They're, like, even the helicarriers crashing in Winter Soldier, maybe the Battle of New York. There were a couple of instances in the Battle of New York that were fun. This fight with all our characters, all our heroes duking it out, that was the most memorable, exciting moment. That felt the most like kids playing with the toys in the toy box.
I really have to agree. And what made it sort of work as well as it did was sort of the idea that we didn't have someone, like, we could root for whoever we wanted. Like it meant, like, even if it was we were on someone's side, like, morally, there was always that moment where, like, we were always excited when somebody did something, no matter whose side it was on.
That is true.
It was like, oh my gosh, that's awesome, they did this. Oh my gosh, that's awesome, they did that. So it was always like, yes.
I felt that, yeah.
And
I definitely felt that.
It was a really fun showcase for everyone's powers.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel like anyone was trying to land a connecting blow.
Really?
I think they actually specifically said that a couple of times in the fight, though. They you're pulling your punches.
Yeah, that is
true.
Like, no matter how hard Cap was going to punch Iron Man, it was always going to be inconsequential.
That's arguable.
That's really arguable,
Captain America's peak human physical strength is really beyond peak human, like the helicopter scene, and by the way,
Black Widow versus Hawkeye would be a better example of.
But I feel like that's the only example in that film and in that scene is just Hawkeye fighting Black Widow.
But at the same,
everyone else is bringing their A game.
I don't really think anybody there was super up on killing their friends.
Yeah, well, I think there's a difference between killing and then like I'm going to take you down.
Yeah,
and that was clear. I think
a lot of these people though, you can't really seriously consider taking them down unless you intend to kill them. I mean,
I don't know
have
about
you
that.
Seen
I mean,
how much you have to do to some of these people to get them down? How broken was Iron Man before he went down?
I'm just saying. These guys fight supervillains and don't kill them, so they're perfectly able to fight other heroes and not kill them in a fight.
Yeah,
that's a thing that can happen. We've seen it.
I'm a big supporter of there. It's not all or nothing when it comes to beating people up.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that it should be. My concern is that it's a little difficult to take down someone who can move buildings with her brain if you don't really put all your force into it. And at the same time, she is still physically human. And if she misses one blow that she's trying to block from you, you're going to take her head off.
I actually think, one second. Well, first of all, Pete, I want you to say your point because you haven't said anything.
I'm sorry.
I think that she, now I'm lost.
Wanda.
No. I think that most of the characters are idealistic enough that whether it's practical to try and stop them without killing them.
Oh no,
or
that's not what I'm arguing.
That's what they're going to try to do,
right?
I think everything
was logical. You know, it's they were fight. They were all fighting with their hearts.
I kind of want to interrupt this chain for one thing.
Go ahead,
because this conversation is what it's all about. It's not really about whether or not, like, it's actually not about whether anybody at the table is correct in their interpretation. This is the geeky comic book conversation
we're
supposed
for?
To be having after a movie like this. There should be disco fries on the table, and someone should be fist deep in it. I don't know what I was going to do with this, but
fair enough.
So I'll take that as you owing me disco fries.
Yeah, we will get disco fries and have this out.
If anybody was supposed to die, the movie would have had Thor and or Hulk.
I'm not saying seriously that they would consider, like, that they wanted them to. I mean, Thor would be, I would be very worried if he was in the movie for entirely other reasons, but it's not that
man.
I seriously think that they would go into a fight considering it. It's that I don't think you would physically be able to fight one of these people with the intention of bringing them down unless it was in your mind that killing them was possible. So you have to come in thinking that you are not at your full A-game fight.
But half these people don't know who Spider-Man is. And he might be 15 for all I know.
Yeah, he may have actually. Yeah. So it's
16.
So again, I think what's cool about this scene is that it was, first of all, cool.
Yeah.
But also that you could have these conversations.
Just my point is that no one was bringing their A game, I think. They were fighting in really cool, amazing ways. But I don't think anyone went in and wasn't in some way pulling a punch or two.
I don't know. But when Aunt Miller, that's like the big, great, big, giant payoff, the money shot of that scene, in my opinion, is when Ant-Man's like running up and he says, I got this thing, I could try it. And it's like, I could split myself in half. And I'm like, if he's risking splitting himself in half, I think he's, I don't know
if you know Ant-Man very well.
But like, and he's just like, and then he presses the button and it's like, little dude is big now.
Giants, man. Little dude is big now. Yeah. There's so many awesome little bits in that scene.
Well, I think everybody was willing to get themselves killed to win, but they weren't willing to kill anyone. Else.
Oh, damn, I thought it was a water truck.
I think we're getting a little distracted.
I'm
by
sorry.
No, it's okay. About whether or not the effect of them not bringing their A game comes in. Because I think it's a very interesting fight.
It is.
That you have
two sides
that want to, they each have their own unique goals that they want to accomplish. But they're both intentionally limiting themselves because the opposing side is their friends.
Trying
and
to
they
take
don't
down
wanna...
your friends without killing them is significantly more difficult,
yeah.
I think, than just killing them
actually,
in a lot of ways.
I think pulling their punches, them being forced to pull their punches, is more interesting than watching them go.
Oh, absolutely!
You know,
absolutely!
Full throttle, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. I think this scene really delivered it. And I honestly, so if we're going to jump to the climax. Which is the other big, obviously the big powerful scene. I think you've got it all. I think you've got so on the Non-Pro website, I published an article on my theories of what would happen, where the actual drama would be in this movie. Because I didn't think it would have anything to do with the Superhero Registration Act.
Right.
I turned out to be somewhat wrong. Actually, largely wrong. So I think it ended up having a lot to do with the Superhero Registration Act, more than I expected. But in my article, I thought all the passion, all the drama would be about whether or not Steve and Tony were going to fight over possession of Bucky. That Steve was going to protect Bucky because he was his friend. and Tony was going to go after Bucky because it would be revealed that Bucky was the person who killed Tony's parents. It was just speculation based on what felt right. But, you know, I'm not just patting myself on the back here, but I'm patting the Russo brothers on the back because I think a decent amount of people did think that. And there was a good, very well done misdirection where a lot of the film was about the Superhero Registration Act legitimately. It actually had major consequences. So it wasn't just sort of like, no, there's no con in our movie. You know, it wasn't a fake out. But the final act was all down to Steve and Tony fighting because of parents and because of friends. Like, mm-hmm. It was an emotional roller coaster. I did not know who to root for. It was tragic. Even Zemo, in those final climactic scenes, I was like, holy crap. I feel almost bad for him. It was the whole thing. The whole thing. The MacGuffin of the six super soldiers that needed to be killed. The fight between three friends or two friends. Three, what, how do we refer to that?
Three guys.
Three guys that were like in a friend triangle. I loved every bit about that. You guys were grunting. What do you feel?
How?
Well, first, fight me on Zemo. That seems like an easy thing you could.
Yeah, this is, I think we're going to move into characters here.
Okay.
Fair.
Because I think Zemo got treated bad.
Wow.
You know what? I feel I feel bad for Zemo.
All right, this is sad.
Because
sickening.
Zemo deserved a better origin.
Wow.
Than that. Zemo, to me, Zemo is a lot like Doctor Doom, especially since Fox has the rights to Doctor Doom in Fantastic Four. I think Baron Zemo should be the Marvel Cinematic Universe's Dr. Doom. And that means pride. Deep pride in his heritage.
Okay.
And this almost a single-minded focus on the Zemo legacy. And you got a flavor of that with, oh, you know, my wife and kids were killed. But he's a humble security worker, essentially, maybe elite black ops, whatever, for Sokovia.
Right.
It's okay, great. You're the elite Latvian super black ops team. Who cares? Navy SEAL gonna backhand you and take you down one shot anyway. Go. You want to interject, Frank?
Listen, I respect that opinion. I don't share it, but I acknowledge that it probably is because I care less about Zemo as a character. Perhaps it's just less exposure to the character. So, I mean, I don't know enough about Zemo. I'll leave it up to somebody else to talk a little bit. But I would say that this might be one of those situations where you really like a character as was portrayed because you're not even aware that it was a completely different character that would be in the comics. A good example might be Mystique. Like, I'm sure there are Mystique comic fans out there who are upset at the way Mystique is presented in X-Men movies, even though she's great. But it's because, you know, you're not familiar enough with the source material.
I have anybody a fanfic else? Theory I'll share later.
About Mystique or Zemo?
No, about Zemo.
Oh, all right.
I mean, I feel like in Age of Ultron, we had Wanda and Quicksilver.
Pietro.
I'm sorry.
Pietro. Yeah. No, we're not allowed to say Quicksilver.
Oh, we're not. Right. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And they had basically the exact same backstory of everyone I care about died in Sokovia,
yeah,
and now we're here to avenge Stark.
They had a Zemo backstory, you're correct.
It felt recycled. That's what I didn't like about Zemo. It felt like exactly the same thing that happened in the last movie. We didn't feel like writing something new.
All right. Okay. That's interesting.
I feel like it was a really interesting story, and the only real problem I have on that is I don't know Zemo from the comics. I've read a lot of comics. I can't recall Zemo in the comics at all. So I have nothing to compare it to.
I'll fill you in on that. Zemo killed Bucky.
When?
In the comics.
Which
in
one?
In 1940s.
Oh, fair.
He's the one who strapped Bucky to the rocket that blew up.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
I thought he
Well, actually, it was Baron Zemo's dad, but he was Baron Zemo, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I felt he was a really interesting character. I really liked him. I agree, though. It was exactly the same story as Scarlet Witch and, I mean, Wanda and Pietro had. And it did feel a bit recycled. I think it was done a lot better with Zemo than I think it was for Wanda.
Agreed.
And Pietro.
Yeah.
I'll agree with that, too. I'll have to say this. Like, my experience with Zemo has really been about from television. Like, he was one of the big, big villains in Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I know Zemo from. Zemo was the anti-Captain America, even more so than Red Skull, really. And that's sort of... And in a weird way, I kind of felt like that came across here. Like, all that, like, he felt like he, whenever he came in and he had the presence, it was like he said, if I have enough experience and patience, I can accomplish anything. And I can do these things because all I lack and all I need is the will to do it. And there's this great scene when he has the Hydra agent and he has him over the water. And it's just like, if you just tell me about this, I could forego going through all of these bloody and horrible things. I don't mind doing them. I'll do them. But if you die at this point, it's simply for your pride. And he felt so intelligent. He felt intimidating in every scene he was in. That actor did a fantastic job. And to me, he felt like Baron Zemo because of the presence of the character. Because he carried that, not necessarily arrogance, but that presence. And beyond that, he carried what you talked about, the line of that character. Mm-hmm. Because it felt not just about that they wound him by killing his family. They took away who he would be and what his family would be in the future. So much of who Zemo was did come off to me in that.
I agree with you on that. And I will say I was really digging Zemo until we got his backstory.
Oh.
Until we got that little monologue about, you know, oh, I hate you because of what you did in Sokovia.
Exactly.
Mm. Big Papa Pete, you ignorant slut. I don't know why we're bringing that back.
I don't know.
It's fine.
It's fitting.
Yeah. No, not at all, actually. But
no.
I feel... All right. I'm going to throw you a bone. If anything made me feel the most like he was anti-Captain America, it was when he was explaining why he did what he did, and he was saying, listen, I couldn't beat these superheroes, but there was something I could do. I can manipulate them into killing each other. That made me feel like this is Zemo's power. And this is maybe even a normal human's power,
right.
Is that these gods are still fragile, weak human beings with human emotions. They can be manipulated into going out all out war on each other, which is one of the reasons why we need the damn Accords in the first place. I really thought it was all perfect. I really love the character. But the voicemail, I love that whole thing. But again, my button on it is I totally acknowledge it may not be Zemo.
Yeah,
I don't know enough about Zemo.
That is Zemo. Zemo is not a regular human.
Yeah, I
Zemo is so much better.
Superior. I believe your interpretation. No. I just don't have enough experience with him.
And I'll tell you my theory, my justification for it, and I'm so glad they kept him alive at the end.
Yeah, me too.
Because it gives room for this.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for him to turn around and say, look, you all assumed that I was... I am Sokovian by birth. So my parents moved to Sokovia. They fled to Sokovia after the Allies won. I would love it if this guy, it's revealed that his grandfather, instead of his father,
mm-hmm.
was Baron Zemo, who fought Captain America in mm-hmm. World War II.
I feel like cool. I would love that to happen. That in fact, I feel like they almost alluded to that. Now, another thing I think they might allude to is like, It's not out of the question or out of the wheelhouse for him to have gotten powers or something else. Like, he was there hanging out with those guys.
He didn't really have powers.
No, he didn't really. But I get what you... But I'm just saying it's not out of the wheelhouse for him to come back and be a villain again. I want him to be.
Yeah, and I definitely... Marvel does have a villain problem. We've called it before. This, first of all, I think it's beautiful that... Again, Black Panther. We'll do Black Panther now, but saving... Zemo, so that you can punish Zemo, like, perfect in all the different ways. The stupid revenge fantasies that kind of like taint superhero franchises, where like bad guys either fall to their deaths or get killed, and that's somehow climactic and good. That extrajudicial killings is a good thing. The fact that Zemo was like, no, the world isn't done with you yet. I think
the living are not done with you.
And that's perfect.
And also ties in perfectly with Black Panther's comic mythology.
Right. And so let's bring up Black Panther. I think a fabulous introduction of a really hard to grasp concept.
Yeah.
I mean, I know like comic companies get a lot of flack for saying it's too hard to make a Wonder Woman movie or a Black Panther movie or whatever. Like, certain things are just way too high concept to work, maybe. But I would think that mystical, magical, super sci-fi African nation might be one of the ones that's a little harder to do than blind guy who fights people in Hell's Kitchen. But they totally nailed it.
Yeah.
100% nailed it.
And you know, the the crazy movie making wizardry that they used to make all that crazy Wakanda stuff fit into the movie?
No.
Just do it like it was in the comic books.
Oh, truly.
Yeah.
It's exactly what they did. They didn't tweak or change anything, really.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was a very... To focus on the characterization. So, stupid revenge is one of the things I hate the most about... maybe about this movie, when people are just sort of like just blinded by what their passions for days at a time, and they just can't stop. But like, I don't have time to listen to you argue. I need to kill you, and that kind of thing. I think Black Panther probably suffered maybe the most from that. But I think
there was a reason.
I think the reason was super valid.
I think also. They're in the comics, you know, T'Challa's big thing was initially, gotta kill the guy who killed my dad. That is a huge thing for him already. So it really was kind of appropriate for it to come up again.
Yeah.
Even if it was a different guy.
Yeah.
And we've already met the guy that it was.
Ba-da-ba-ba.
Hmm?
Andy Serkis in Age of Ultron.
It was Claw.
Oh.
Was Claw. Ulysses Claw.
So,
who was the dude that killed T'Challa's father.
In the comics.
In the comics.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
I thought maybe I missed a scene where Andy Serkis shows
no, no,
up.
No.
yeah.
Or maybe
Lord Smoke is Crossbones. Oh. I want to bring up Crossbones for a second. We may not be done with Black Panther. You could bring him up again.
Okay.
But I like the little bit of Crossbones we got.
Yeah.
I remember in Winter Soldier being a little like they lingered on whatever his name was.
Rumlow
just a bit too much. Mm. And we're like, we're going to see that guy again. Oh, he survived the building collapsing on him? Huh, we're going to see him again. And we did. And just enough. You know, I liked it. I'm a fan of it. I'm okay with little head nods and high fives and winks and nods. I didn't need a whole production.
I didn't need that, especially not in this movie.
Mm.
But Crossbones deserved better. I really think he is one of Marvel's best henchmen going. And I don't think he deserved to be killed off.
Oh, I agree. Killed was a little extreme for me.
I was okay with the way he was used in the movie, except for them killing him.
Although, if it takes a page out of Civil War comics, maybe he doesn't. Because of weird magic. Anyways, yeah.
And I feel like it was good, because like I feel like he kind of got the hit that he really wanted in on Cap. Because like his death is arguably the reason why all of this kind of spurs out and everything goes as south as it does. Mm. Like, without him, I mean, maybe we don't have the movie.
Don't get me wrong. He doesn't deserve to win.
Right.
He doesn't deserve to get a win.
He
just deserves not to die.
You're such a Marvel fan that if everybody got the attention that he deserved, the movie would be 15 hours long and directed by Ken Burns.
Yes, I don't have a problem with this.
I do not either, actually. All right, so quickly, other characters that were fabulous. And let's talk about the characters we've already seen. I love Tony. Robert Downey Jr. playing him a young version of himself was fantastic.
Oh, yeah,
they nailed that.
Absolutely.
He nailed Robert Downey Jr. in the 80s. You know what I mean?
He
looked young. He looked like they had earlier cast him. They're like, listen, in about 20 years, we're going to be making these movies.
I am dying to see the behind the scenes of how they did that.
Yeah.
Because they had to have taken footage from old Robert Downey Jr. movies and manipulated them digitally somehow.
Is it CGI? Is there makeup involved? Is it both?
I think it's both.
Whoa.
I think they see it's CGI. His like
it
his,
was oh, such
but
light
I think
years.
He was doing it. Yeah. I think it was all live.
There was a lot going on. It was so.
It
cool.
was such light years ahead of Jeff Bridges in Tron 2.
Oh God,
Electric Boogaloo.
Who both of you or all of you? Jeff Bridges has never done anything.
No,
wrong.
No. It was good, but
Tron 2 was a fabulous film.
I'm
Academy Award winning.
All right, I'm just comparing the effects.
Had a good soundtrack,
which Jeff Bridges had nothing to do with.
I don't know.
He has admitted he didn't do all the hands-on effects work in Tron 2.
I'll believe it.
He did everything for Tron 1, but he didn't do Tron 2. Disney wouldn't let him.
I'll definitely say, like, I feel like Tony Stark got a great characterization in this film because first off, I feel like we got the we got how his and Pepper's relationship was in that film without Pepper actually having to be in the film.
Right.
Like, that all came across so, like, perfectly. Like, we get it. And, like, she didn't even need to be there. That's how well it was done in that film. Right. Was like we got it. And Tony was like, we were able to see the pain in a lot of things.
I was able to read his pain, not just from the relationship, but from the stress between him and Steve and the guilt that I did not get. Again, we keep leaking into the comics, but it's important. Like, this story has been tried and not well done. That's too much. It's been tried and it's difficult. It's very difficult to make you feel equally sympathetic to all the people involved. And I totally felt that for Steve, for Tony at least.
Well, the last time I saw Iron Man 3, it was in Mandarin, so I'm a little shaky on how it ended, but it felt to me that it ended with a lot of supposed closure that I felt was not really evident here.
Yeah.
And I was a little thrown off by that. I expected more I'm done Iron Man sort of thing.
I have a couple answers to that one. I think it was a contract negotiation issue.
Yeah, no, that's fair, and I can accept that. It felt a little odd to watch, though, kind of. Should I be aware there's a contract thing?
Yeah.
I'm not really sure how to feel. What should I anticipate happening?
Did you feel like they did a good job of wrapping it up with, like, hey, I got rid of my suits? He kind of, like, confesses he got rid of all his suits, and then things are stressful with Pepper, and he seems like he's very much in doubt of what his future is.
Oh, I loved his characterization and the PTSD thing he had going on. I thought it was wonderfully written, very, very good, very strong, very interesting to watch. Just when he came back in his suit suddenly, I was like, did he just build it? Was it already there? I'm not
That's
sure.
That's a very good question, actually. Yeah.
Like, yeah. I wasn't entirely sure when he said, give me 72 hours. I was like, 72 hours to build a suit? Or to catch
Well, that's
cat?
Very confusing because Avengers...
Wasn't entirely sure.
Avengers 2 took place in between.
That's true, yeah.
And he was suited up for Avengers 2.
But I think...
although, at the beginning of Avengers 2, I think they explained it well enough.
Yeah.
Where he's created all these suits that are designed to run as drones.
To be honest, I think that Iron Man 3 had delivered as a period that we should not have taken seriously.
Agreed. And
which is reasonable from Tony.
It's, yeah.
I think it was reasonable from Tony.
I think it was serious at the moment, and Tony is mercurial enough to change and bend the rules around himself.
Can we move on to another character?
No.
I want to actually bring up one last thing about that character, which is like the final scene in that film where I swear to God, Downey kills it in that scene where he is losing his mind, and I absolutely love that moment where he's like, he killed my mom.
Oh, the fight?
Oh,
yeah,
that's so good.
I was like, you got it. Like, in that one line, it was like where Cap's like trying to talk him down. I was like, he killed my mom.
Yeah,
and like that was it.
It was heartbreaking. Yeah.
It was so good. Like,
heartbreaking.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was my HS moment.
Yeah.
When they made that reveal, that's who was in the car.
I did not see that coming. No. I really should have. It was
you
built
didn't?
Up so perfectly.
No.
I didn't either.
I didn't see it either.
Did anyone read my article?
No.
I didn't want to spoil it. I didn't want to spoil any of the movie for myself.
I'm but
right
I didn't
know.
I, really
I know,
did.
But like, it could have been real.
But Frank, you're so insightful.
Oh, all right. Thank you.
I didn't want to run the risk.
Let's talk more about me.
I mean, it did turn out you were right. So,
yeah.
I'm pretty excited
spoiler
about it.
Spoiler tag, though.
Although I was really like the whole time I was like, is this? Because they're doing a good job of actually making it about the Superhero Registration Act. I don't know. But that scene is shot so unusually that with the car. All right.
Perfectly foreshadowed it. And I completely didn't pick up on it.
They did it perfectly.
I think
was
the misdirection
putting it together,
was perfect.
Yeah.
The first time it was on screen, like with the car scene and him getting it, I was like, who's in the car? Who's driving it? They specifically said no witnesses. So I have to assume he killed whoever's in the car. And I found it odd that we didn't see him pull some rando out and shoot him. So I did note it. But they put so much emphasis on what he was pulling from the trunk, it completely went out of my mind immediately.
Right.
Every time we saw it from
good
then
misdirection.
On, completely misdirected me.
Yeah.
Like, I even acknowledged it in my head. What does that mean? Moved right along.
All right.
Now, Frank, you want to move along?
Yeah. All right. So, next character, I mean, it connects Sebastian Shaw, Winter Soldier. Yeah.
Sebastian Shaw, the X-Men villain.
Did I do that?
Yes,
you did.
What is his
Sebastian
name?
Sebastian Stan is the actor's name.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
All right, Bucky Barnes.
Yeah, so I'm going to stick with Sebastian Shaw. Right. Let's talk about Kevin Bacon.
Okay. I like Kevin
Everything's
Bacon.
Connected.
But I hate Footloose.
True enough. All right, anyway.
I like right. Bacon in general.
The theme of the show has just changed. Right. Pete, you hate Footloose. Go on.
Oh, my God. Really?
No, we're not going to do this. We don't have enough
I'm
hours.
I'm quoting LFO lyrics in here.
All right.
Bucky Barnes.
So, Bucky. It's a difficult role-playing or acting, as professionals call it, a stoic character, like a stone-faced character is difficult because
absolutely.
Like you don't have a lot to go with. And there are moments where he gets like a lot of passionate, like anger and the kind of the rage of being mind controlled. But I do think he did a good job of displaying I think the friendship between those two characters
was perfect.
Yeah.
He acted the emotion breaking through the stone facade.
Oh, absolutely.
Perfectly.
Yeah.
You see these tiny, they start out tiny, but they grow ever wider cracks in
emotional
that stone
fissures.
Facade. Yes.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like it.
You know what's also difficult to do, I've heard by professionals who do this, is playing complicated emotion motivation. So for example, he doesn't seem to care about anything or anyone. He has no memories of the good times. He kind of only remembers the bad, but has it kind of like under a layer of conditioning, yet he keeps fighting to stay alive. Mm-hmm. And that kind of the fight to stay alive is difficult to portray when you're also at the same time like emotionless. So like what makes you like what instinct keeps you going? And he played instinct to keep going really well until eventually like sort of the fade away and become I need to, you know, save myself. I need to prove who I am. I need to save the world because there are six more monsters like me. I think the transitions were perfect.
I think it was a completely flawless performance.
Yeah, I think it was great. Now, a real stink fest would be Captain America.
Oh, you don't mean that.
No, you don't mean that.
No, it was good.
Yeah,
it
was beautiful. I felt like there was a lot. It transitioned, Chris Evans transitions very well from being the, I'm Captain America, and I'm talking American. To be like, because there's a lot of scenes like that in the movie, because he doesn't lose that at any point in time where he's very Spirit of America and then goes to being like, yeah. And I feel like the great thing about this film and what they portray both in Winter Soldier and now in this film is that they realize exactly what Captain America's weakness is, and it's Bucky Barnes.
Oh,
like that is exactly what that is what his chink in his armor is. It will always be Bucky,
his bromance,
and even to the point of where Crossbones gets him to like stop for a moment, and it's like he mentions Bucky, and then it's just and Chris Space portrays cadet. That really well, where he's just like, oh crap, every time.
I think specifically Captain America's weakness is a loyalty to people he specifically like knew and trusts and things like that. And at this point, the only one left that he really knows, as in knows before he was Captain America, was Bucky. And I think Peggy was a lot of that weakness too, but now she's dead and irrelevant forever, apparently.
I have mixed feelings about this. I dislike the idea that Captain America's weakness is Bucky Barnes. I am confused by his like almost nonchalant feelings towards Peggy, who's like, oh man, she died. It's a shame.
I'm gonna make out with her niece.
But there's still someone. But there's still a lady named Carter, so that's okay. They're the same person.
Give me like think about that for a minute.
Yeah.
If his weakness is like just loyalty to the people in his past, he seems to have had a decently like sane offboarding point with Peggy, where he's like, she'll always mean something to me, but I will not, you know, risk the security of the world over her. I guess maybe that didn't come up.
I feel like it was more of she didn't need him anymore for that, but Bucky doesn't really have anyone on his side at this point.
Maybe
so Steve feels like he needs me.
Maybe also, it's also guilt.
It is. Yeah. I feel like it's also part of it's like, A, he left Bucky on that train, and B, Bucky was his cap. While he was growing up.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, too.
He came in and he rescued him every single time he needed him. And this was back when Cap wasn't Cap, when he was just, you know, little Steve. And Bucky didn't care. Bucky was there. He supported him. He let him stay at his place when his parents died. Bucky was his Captain America.
How many times in this movie did he say, he would have done it for me over and over and over, and specifically this movie alone?
And don't forget, Cap couldn't punch old age in the face and make it stop.
Yeah,
he could actually do something about
until we get the Spider-Man license from Vulture back.
That's a deep cut.
Not that deep, but all right.
Yeah. Hey, I got something to say if we're moving on to a new character.
Yeah.
Ant-Man.
Oh, all right. I thought that was a good transition to Spider-Man, but screw you. Ant-Man, I love everything about Paul Rudd in this.
Everything.
Perfect.
Yeah. Ant-Man was such a radically different type of film from the Captain America and Avengers movies.
Right.
I was very concerned about how you bring Ant-Man into this universe.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it perfectly.
Yeah.
Ant-Man just shows up and is... Wow, I can't believe I'm in this universe with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pretty much.
Introducing sleeping in a van.
The correct answer was to do it. Is how they did it. It was really great. Brilliant.
I'm a part of things.
In keeping with that, all the little bullets of comic relief, not only that Ant-Man brings, but that everybody brings, really makes the movie... For me, I'm not going to say the other franchise movie, the grim, dark, sadness fest that were these other movies.
Why did you name it by name? Grim, dark, sadness fest, the movie.
Right. But when you look at these
starring
movies...
Starring Ben Affleck.
It's difficult to get emotional about a movie that you didn't actually enjoy watching. And if there's no funny points or amusing or happy points... You didn't enjoy watching
it. Wait, we are talking about Daredevil, right?
And how in the hell do people, like, filmmakers not get this? Because, I mean, in pretty much any other genre, it's clear. You do action scene, you have some drama, and some lighter moments someone who's smarter than me could come up with the word for it.
Some moments of levity.
Yes.
Moments of levity, wow.
I'm not going to give him credit for being smarter. I mean, there is a filmmaking term for when you make the funny after the sad.
I think that was it.
It's not moments of
levity. Funny after the
yes, of course. I mean, have a degree.
It's not going to be a completely dramatic movie. We just laughed there.
How many rated R superhero movies just got announced as soon as Deadpool was successful?
Yeah, that was,
you guys totally got the point of why people like that.
But the comic relief.
Because it was rated R.
Yeah. Exactly. Everybody wants a rated R grimdark superhero movie.
Hey, do you want a job at DC Films?
Yeah. All right.
We're
not getting any
qualities.
Money from Marvel. We should not that much of fanboys. I did not specifically call out intentionally any other film. But
I didn't call out
having
any film.
The light moments really makes the dramatic moments have it's catharsis.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
It gives you a moment of like, before it gets serious again.
Mm.
And I think for me, I don't want to like not focus on any character. There's some really good characterizations we haven't hit to yet, but come on, guys. Spider-Man
completely superfluous.
Was
I'm sorry.
No, that's a perfect example of
you shut up. hold on. I'm gonna finish my point first.
Continue.
Spider-Man, amazing. I thought he was
spectacular.
Yes.
Web of.
I really did. Wow. We got the one last person who would like that joke. It was out.
Yeah.
I love the way Spider-Man was brought into the film. It was ridiculously lighthearted. It was not heavy-handed. It was not like we need two films. And a TV show to build up to this. God. We all know who Spider-Man is.
I just don't understand how he got his powers.
He was interrupted while he was trying to narrate his origin. And he's like, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Thank God for that.
Good. Yeah, I would love... The only thing that would make it better if Aunt May was hooking up with this weird Canadian guy who also wouldn't let him talk about any of his problems or his certainly not his costume or his nickname. I don't want to hear anything. Hugh Jackman as Wolverine set the trend of, I do not care that you were in a superhero movie. I'm going to cut you off. I'm going to call you Wheels. Talk about your costume. Cyclops.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm sorry, I got off a little bit, but I really do think like a fabulous way of a really complicated issue. How do you bring this character into the film? It could have been super superfluous if you had put too much effort into it. I think it was perfect, and I love the Spider-Man's fighting scenes.
Aww.
And so I didn't.
Excited.
Did you? Is there normally this much talking
are
in it when
cry?
You fight? It's so good, so good. Do you want to crap on all my joy?
Yes, I do.
All right, go for it.
Now, My problem is not that I disliked his characterization or his involvement. I thought in the fight, he was fantastic. I thought his character looked good. I'm glad they cast an actual teenager as a teenager for maybe the first time ever for Spider-Man.
Probably.
I want to say so because...
Tobey Maguire was a teenager at one point.
I don't think he ever played Spider-Man.
He was Spider-Man, but at one point.
I certainly acted like one.
Thoroughly grateful for that, I am. I think he had absolutely zero place in this film because what I initially interpreted his place to be when Tony went to introduce him is Tony's gone off the deep end and he's enlisting children into his what is literally a war at this point. But then they never followed through on that. There was no at the end other than people commenting, how old is that kid? They didn't actually push the agenda of Tony just got a child to fight in his war.
And I feel like
that needed an end. And because it didn't get it, it felt like an addition that didn't need to be there other than for marketing.
I think a couple of things here. First off, I think you can explain that by A, most people, probably, possibly even no one but Tony, knows that Spider-Man is in fact a kid.
Oh yeah, right. But narrative-wise.
He's young, but yes. And we may very well get consequences of that in the Spider-Man movie. And thirdly, yes, he was completely superfluous. There was no reason to have him in that movie other than, holy crap, we can put him in this movie. Won't that be awesome?
Right. And my argument is that, yeah, I love the slow burn, the plotting that makes something like Bucky being the person who killed Tony's parents possible. But I also totally respect we want to do this, let's do it. We don't have to explain Rocket Raccoon's planet before we bring him in. You guys want a talking raccoon? Go for it. You want the big giant tree monster? Cool. Like, I like a certain amount of just have fun with it. I will acknowledge that if you look at it from a certain perspective and a totally reasonable perspective, Tony's off the deep end. But for something, again, the filmmaking shorthand of that comic scene, as in the comedic scene of introducing Spider-Man, was a hey guys, relax. This is going to be fun. We're going to put Spider-Man in.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I'm like, all right, I don't need consequences to this. Even though it does make sense. And like immediately after, I want to talk about the consequences of Vision shooting at somebody and then hitting somebody else and the friendly fire incident. Like that for me, I want super serious consequences. What did you do to Rhodey? But like you put a teenager in danger. I'm like, yeah, but that was just a joke. That's fine. It doesn't matter.
I feel like it really needed to be addressed because of, I hate to get, you know, put the cart ahead of the horse, but because of specifically what the original comic was mostly about with, you know, all of those kids that died and everything being the catalyst.
Interesting.
I feel like it was an interesting inclusion that I think kind of flew in the face of what the original war was supposedly about if it didn't get addressed, and maybe it will in the future, but I feel like it really should have had like a nail mention at the end of the movie that it wasn't okay.
I can definitely see that. And actually, I have a similar one for when Ant-Man, who also seems somewhat superfluous, yes, he was an adult, but also he was like a guy we saw once. Let's bring him to the battle.
Well, I think the inclusion of both of those characters showed how both teams were on the edge, grasping at straws.
Yes.
You know, we need help. We're going to bring in whoever we can get our hands on.
But specifically about Ant-Man is how when he becomes giant, we're doing a little teasing about Lex. I'm like really excited, think it's fun. Paul Rudd's great.
And
oh, God, he's become giant. I remember what happens in the comic at this point.
I had the same reaction of, oh, no.
And I said that. And I was like, I don't know what's good. And I was relieved that it wasn't a plot point that we had to beat on. Because I think it would have been inappropriate as it would have been if he was like, you brought a teenager to this fight. Yeah. We don't have time for this argument right now. We have other emotions.
See,
I'm not saying I think that they should all
I get it. I respect the opinion. Yeah.
I wish that there had been just a moment where, like, Tony is like, I shouldn't have done
in
that.
In Ken Bird's 12-hour Civil War, there will be several episodes dedicated to that.
I mean, just a 5-second mention so that I know it will be addressed at some point. Just an acknowledgement.
I mean, he does kind of show a little bit of remorse when Spider-Man goes down. He's like,
true.
Don't get up.
True,
don't
that.
Give up.
Point on,
you're done.
And
yeah.
the whole time he was, you know, you stay back, just web them up, kid.
Right.
But through the fight, I thought it was done so well, and then...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Marissa Tomei.
That really did bother me, actually. The fact that Peter kept referring to her just as May.
That was weird.
That was disrespectful.
Peter Parker is more respectful.
All right. We're moving on to the next.
Raised him better than that.
Next character.
But it was only for a few weeks.
Well, we're talking about
age. Yes.
We're talking about the, speaking of the thing that happened with Rhodey, I feel like, should we give Rhodey his own announcer, or do we want to just go off with like a few of the side
maybe
characters?
Maybe we do a quick bullet through. I think I like the way Black Widow, as a Captain America character, is developing.
Yeah.
Falcon is a lot of fun, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He was the other best friend, and him and Bucky's banter was fantastic. Right.
Terrence Howard would have been 10 times better still.
No, I disagree. I'm finally turned around on...
Cheetle-loving freak.
Yeah, I like
you're a Cheetlehead.
What was the Stan Lee line? Tony Stank.
Oh, that was good.
That back and forth made it for me. I was like, all right, you're best friends.
Terrence would have been better,
I actually
though.
Really like that scene at the end, like right before that, where he's like, his legs don't work like at all really anymore, and he's sitting there with Tony, and I think it was a great final scene you needed after that huge beat up at this.
See the consequences.
Yeah, and he's just sitting there, and he's like, you know, this is bad. I really regret this happened to me. But it doesn't change my mind about what we did.
I love
that was great.
Scene.
Good like, scene. And yeah. Fantastic work.
And I feel like we needed that because we needed to be reminded that just because
main character is in favor of something doesn't mean it's the right thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like
yeah.
we definitely needed that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're going to move on to that in a little bit. Yeah, and I know, Hawkeye was there. I actually prefer Hawkeye in this than the last Avengers movie.
Thank you.
Yeah,
agreed.
Yeah. I feel like I don't want to miss anybody, but I think we hit most of the
Vision and Wanda. I want to talk about them as a pair.
I like them. I like the way they tease their relationship.
Relationship. It was very good.
Film. We're gonna get the Young Avengers movie 30-year plan, man. Totally set up.
I got a hard time with seeing. I have a hard time shipping Wanda and the Vision. Given that she's supposed to be like 16 in this,
well, I mean, he's like
well,
five.
He's one.
Yeah. He's like one,
right?
Yeah.
And can we talk about whose decision it was to take him out of the sweater vest? Because that sweater vest was on point.
It was Mr. Rogers' Vision. It was
fantastic.
So a little bit about the actors. I think Olsen does a good job with, and the writing was good with Wanda as the screw loose, the character that has maybe the least control over her powers. It feels a lot of responsibility for things that maybe aren't her fault and keeps piling it on.
Has a hard time maintaining her accent.
Sure. I'm
nitpicking here.
Yeah. But like, so she, and well, I think this is a pretty good, well, let's go with Vision for a minute.
Yeah.
I think a very building on the tragic character of person trying to cope with a world they just found unfolding before them. Interesting kind of neutral God perspective, almost like what Dr. Manhattan could have been in a different fiction.
Right.
I actually kind of disagree a little bit.
Oh?
Because I think they missed an opportunity for a bit more complex character with Vision, because in this reality, he was Jarvis.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
And there's no mention of that, really. They really don't touch on the fact that
he had a
years-long relationship with Tony should be informing him, at least in like a subconscious level.
To a little degree.
Nothing that means anything. Like, he opens the door, and he does like some bookkeeping stuff for Tony.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. Like, there's still all this subtlety to his relationship to Stark that still follows through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll even argue to some degree that's half of why he's on Stark's side, is because of that weird loyalty that he just has.
This is my job. This is
and
what
even
I
that guilt that he has over what happened to Rhodey, I feel like he's still... That's all, I feel like, in a weird way, a connection to his past. Or past, if you can call that life before this was a life. And
I think there's a decent amount of projection on this, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
it's all very meta.
I do think that this is a... Like, they did a great job balancing these characters, but there was like a dozen characters in this film.
Yeah.
So I think Vision might be one of the ones
who just had a
little...
I don't blame anyone for dropping a ball here or there. And if there is a ball to drop, maybe it was that one.
Yeah.
I think it's still worth criticizing.
So to pull it back to Wanda, though, and to transition into the differences between the comic and the movie, I think Wanda
was in it.
Yeah, Wanda was a great use. So this is the basic premise of the comic. I guess spoiler alerts to this. is in Civil War the comic, there are superheroes everywhere throughout the Marvel Universe. And at one point, a group of superheroes,
the New Warriors,
have a reality TV show.
Yes.
Right? And in it, they're fighting a bunch of villains. And
Fight goes out of control.
Right.
One of the villains named Nitro detonates, causing this huge explosion in Stamford, Connecticut, which kills, I think they say...
900 people?
900. It fluctuates.
Hundreds of kids. Yeah.
Yeah, hundreds,
yeah, hundreds of children. Elementary school blows up.
Right. So, a pretty tragic thing. Now, there's a couple of things that we thought weren't going to happen in the movie. Specifically, there aren't thousands of heroes, but they do make reference that there are more coming all the time. More super-powered individuals. So,
Of the big things that the Superhero Registration Act was in the comic books was that superheroes with secret identities reveal them to the public.
Yes.
Or at least to the government.
Right.
This was largely a non-issue in the Marvel Cinematic Universe because of various things. You didn't have superheroes where that was an issue for them.
Yeah, for the most part, right.
I think a big problem is that, like, in the comics, the Superhero Registration Act was... It felt a little bit like the Mutant Registration Act that, you know, it always comes up, where it was definitely a problem because while it came out of like a good concern for hundreds of dead children, it put a lot of people at risk, people who weren't vigilantes, people who were children, people who knew vigilantes, because in the Marvel comic universe, getting killed by, like, your family getting murdered by a supervillain is a very serious problem, and it's not as much so in the MCU.
I mean, that came up a lot in S.H.I.E.L.D., right?
Right. S.H.I.E.L.D. does a better job of making you feel like there's a lot more supers out there.
There's a lot more supers, and their identities, and S.H.I.E.L.D. finding out what their identities are, and if that's okay, and what happens with that information. Because, like, I mean, we remember, you know, superpower people were murdered.
Right.
Because their identities were in the S.H.I.E.L.D. database, and Hydra found them.
Right, right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think, I mean, you can't expect people to go see a movie and be like, I've seen all the other movies and all the TV shows.
Yeah.
But I think there was this was a clever divergence from the comic in that they made it less about personal freedoms and, the superhero as a race or a people being persecuted by the government, although there was a little bit in there, and more about the logistics of why they should be under the thumb of the UN.
Mm-hmm, right.
I'll leave that aside for a second because, I want to go back into Wanda. Wanda being the person who kind of misuses her power or is sort of a weaponized superpower that is not quite under control, formerly under Hydra control, blows up a diplomatic mission of high importance, lots of people dying, major international focus of pain, was cool for lots of different reasons. Mm-hmm. Not only because you're playing with the characters you've already introduced, but like it seems a lot more legitimate. It was weird in the comic. It was Speedball and really Nitro, who was the blame of that explosion. It was different than Wanda, who is literally the only person. Well, Wanda and Crossbones. How do I put this? Like, it seems more reasonable for international agencies to want to step in and say these superpowered individuals should be licensed. It fit perfectly into the story, and I like the fact that it gave it an international feel, so that not everything of importance is happening in the U.S. of A. Right.
In Civil War, it was just USA.
It was an American issue.
Yeah, the Superhero Registration Act was just US.
Right. Mm.
And, you know, the Thing fled to France to escape.
Which is a fun series of comics.
Also an excellent 50s horror movie. The Thing fled to France. Yeah.
Really weird 70s romantic comedy, but it was...
It was odd.
Oh, God.
I don't want to know.
So, yeah, there are some differences in that, but I feel like all these little differences cascade into a film whose plot is easier to digest and whose the various sides of the battle are more clearly defined. Again, in the comics. So we find out Tony is... pro-registration because he feels guilty for something. Like, in the comics, I think it's mostly because he's...
He does believe that they need checks and balances.
Yeah,
he thinks that they're...
Mm. There's a couple different reasons. I mean, these are many issues. So one of the things Tony says is he feels guilty. He has a moment where he talks to a family member of someone who died. Now, he isn't directly responsible with the new warriors or anything, but he is a superpowered individual who has not done enough. The other part of it is...
That's mirrored in the film.
Yeah, and the other part of it is that Tony feels like, if I don't do this, someone worse will.
Yes.
If I don't limit superheroes, someone worse will.
And they very briefly touch on that in the film. I think Tony's got like one half a line that mentions that.
Now, yeah. I'm trying to stave off something that could be worse by doing this.
On the surface, that seems like a reasonable argument for Tony. But in the comics, as we delve deeper into it, we find out things about secret prisons in the negative zone.
Oh, yeah.
Characters who don't agree with this accord will be locked up locked away forever.
We basically find out that what Reed and Tony have planned is literally no better than what a supervillain would do.
Oh, right. Absolutely. It was horrible.
The edge, basically, that story keeps getting pushed to the point of ridiculousness, where at the end, you really can't trust Tony's argument. I mean, there are still people who think Tony is maybe has a good point in the comics, but I think it's far less than those who would agree with him in this film. That's my opinion on that.
Right.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, just to put it out there, Captain America in the comics, he is against the idea of state-sanctioned registration of all individuals who have superpowers, because this is not just him and his friend Bucky and maybe 5 or 10 other people he knows. Mm-hmm. Because this involves the weirdo mutants who have no powers. This involves the humans who have who are like freak accidents, again, no significant powers. Everyone.
And it was in the comics, it was a blanket statement that anyone, if you have powers, either has to agree to work for the government or agree to somehow have your powers removed.
Yes.
And we'll figure that out later.
And when Steve stands up and says, "That's not my America," the government shield specifically calls him an enemy of the state and they try to capture him. It's a lot like the Winter Soldier scene with Hydra, only this is actually coming from, quote, legitimate government. So Captain America in the comics seems a lot more clearly right. Because, again, it's an overbroad state argument. It's an overbroad law.
Just one regret is I really wish we could have seen... I wish S.H.I.E.L.D. was still around in the movies in this. Just because I would have loved to have seen that scene with when Cap tells off Maria Hill.
Yeah.
and jumps out of the helicarrier and try to arrest him. That would have been great on film.
Yeah, it really would have been great. And the closest we will ever get is the Winter Soldier scene, I think. So in that opinion, in my opinion, and we could now discuss this, I feel like the movie does a better job of making whose side are you on an argument that has sides that you could legitimately take. And I think I've come down on, in the comics, I'm definitely Team Cap. And in the movie, I think I'm Team Iron Man from some of the flaws we've discussed earlier in this podcast of where Captain America doesn't specifically call out this clause is terrible and that thing is awful.
Yeah.
You know, personally, I disagree. And I think that in... I know, shocking.
Yeah.
I think in the comics that if... mostly because of the issue the comics usually have is when it's written by 100 different writers, things tend to get a little wibbly-wobbly here and there. And I think the original kind of, like... problem got a little bit lost, and then there were zero prisons and blah 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 stuff in things.
How do you mean? So you're suggesting, like, in the original...
I'm saying in the original presentation of what the problem was in Civil War, all of that wasn't there yet. That came to be as the comic progressed. But when you actually started reading the comic and you were introduced initially to the problem that was being presented, people are dying. There's a lot of superheroes. I think both sides had very strong arguments in either direction, and personally, I was Team Cap and still am, even without all the weird prison stuff and all of the things that eventually became in the fallout. I think that Cap was correct, but the original presentation of we need these checks and balances was not wrong, because there were people who were doing, you know, TV shows where they catch supervillains and blow up hospitals.
We're not so different, you and I. I also agree. I agree that in the front-loaded Civil War plot line of maybe we should do something about registering licensing these guns that are people.
I think vigilantism that is a good, maybe shouldn't be super.
I think that is a good argument. That Team Tony, Team
and
Steve.
And that, to me, is what Civil War was.
Steve almost wouldn't have been as opposed to the initial version of it. But the comic, I can't divorce it to what it became.
No, that's fair. You know, and I can appreciate that.
I feel like the movie actually, in a weird way, handles that argument better, like, by the nature of saying not necessarily... Not everybody and their mother has to register. And we're just basically saying, like,
if
you're right.
If you are fighting with superpowers, you need to be part of a government organization.
Yes. It's not saying that every single human being, which is crazy, like, if random people start getting superpowers out there, I think that that would be unbelievably unconstitutional to expect everybody to register, to become a superheroes and register with the government. But to say, if you're going to do this... You better do it under our banner or under the UN's banner or somebody's.
I'm serious. I think Tony has a good argument. I really do think it's reasonable for this non-sanctioned team of soldiers to be sanctioned.
Like, the idea that the Avengers answers to no one is completely ridiculous. And I didn't even realize that that was what the problem was when the movie started. And when they actually came out and said it, I was like... What?
It took a long time before Captain actually came up with a good argument, which is the whole, how often is the government screwed us? Which I don't know if he said that literally.
No, he didn't say literally. No, but
and I think Cap still had a point.
Yeah.
Or there was another point to be made, because you don't have... How long does it take the UN to respond?
Make a decision.
In Age of Ultron, were you going to sit around and wait for the Security Council to decide, yes, I think it's time to send the Avengers in. The entire nation would have been destroyed.
One of the biggest problems we had was the incident where they blew up that office building accidentally.
Yeah, that was probably the beginning. Yeah,
it was a terrible, terrible incident.
Do not blow up.
But what would have happened if they hadn't stepped in?
All right, so here I'm going to step in for an argument. There's a couple things that are... This is, again, really awesome to me, because there's a lot of like fake... There's movie-making shorthand, and then there's prejudice we have that we bring into the film.
Right.
So we've all just said, how long would it take the UN to react to an alien robot invasion? And my answer is, I have no idea about that. I don't think that number would be easily determined. I don't think we have any precedence for that.
You do, actually.
For an alien robot, to hell.
First of all,
Al, go to hell, but then answer this question.
Frank, they react faster than you find out about it.
Oh, man.
Womp.
Badass. Right. But Al, no, I want to hear what stupid thing you were going
to
say.
Well, the UN already technically has people and armies that they go under its banner and take actions. And necessarily, I wouldn't necessarily say the length of time it takes them to react is the problem. It's how they react is normally the problem, because more often than not, those are travesties.
I'm gonna say footnote everything Al just said, because I'm like 900% sure. Okay, 90% sure that is not correct. The UN does not have standing armies.
Well, not as an army, but
they do not have. Do not act without any sort of Security Council clause. That they've always been.
That is not what I said.
I'm here to fight the moon.
And they're run by the Illuminati.
I'm pretty sure we're in tinfoil hats. But no, here's my point: is that
New World Order. New World Order.
Like, you took the worst kind of UN, the UN travesty or whatever. Like, and this is what I'm talking about with prejudice. Where we all kind of nudge each other and say, UN, slow to act, right? Like, yep, sure, Facebook Obama. Like, no, like, very few people could pull out actual causes where it has been slow to react, specifically not in terms of robot alien invasion. Like, that is a different animal. And also, traditionally in international law, like, we're not going to have a situation where, well, actually, we don't know this, is my point. I'm not pulling out international law and saying that this is the truth. I'm saying, like, because we don't know what the accords were, we can't imagine that there was, like, a no, I'm my bad clause, where, like, if aliens attack, protect the world, afterwards, we're going to look over what you've done. And if what you did was wrong, there will be, you know, consequences. You have to do like the same thing that happens kind of in a regular military when they're engaged someplace. If they have to, like, fight something, they don't need to get it approved before they shoot.
Yeah.
But afterwards, they have to be held accountable to what they did. But my point is, I don't know. We don't know what that was. We went in there with some shorthand, and a lot of, I think, American shorthand is government bad. My problem with Captain America specifically, and that side of the argument, is I'm not because of the kind of douche I am, I am not so willing to accept that the UN would fail in this task, in this hypothetical task.
Yeah,
it's
me
like
neither,
I didn't go in there with honestly. That chip on my shoulder going, big government, never going to do it right.
My question is, how were they operating before? I mean,
they were a private organization.
Private organization, totally
like,
funded.
Just wandering but like SHIELD? Into Nigeria and blowing stuff up?
Were they operating the same as SHIELD?
No, SHIELD
I think
was
SHIELD
different.
Is like what an international... I think it's an international joint task force.
I mean, if you want to SHIELD. Question...
World security
that's the world yeah, it's sort of like a, it's like it's kind of like G.I. Joe, for lack of a better term. Like no. SHIELD.
So basically what we're really saying is because it would be boring, probably, there isn't a lot of like fine detail to any of this, and I'm fine with that, but it did have a side effect for me of being like, that's a stupid thing you're angry about. It wasn't in, like, I really did feel like, you know, well, I kind of want you to be held accountable to political parties and to the government and to the people. Like, I'm sorry, Captain America, you're a cool dude and all, but you made the wrong decision backing up your friend for not getting him arrested. He should have gone to jail and faced a trial of Black Panthers.
But at the same time,
by that
he
I
was,
mean the activists.
He wasn't going to get a trial.
Yeah, and if like whenever that's made more clear, and the movie does a good job. Like, at no point was I like, this is stupid. This was it was one-sided. I felt it was a little, like, there were times it was less strong than others, but whenever they did that, they did a good job of like, hey, he has to, he's being pushed.
Just to wrap this up a little bit, I think all this debate that we're having about it is proof that the Russo brothers did what they were setting out.
Hell
oh,
yes.
Absolutely.
The Russo brothers have said they wanted people to walk out of the theater arguing about whose side you were on.
And they did that.
I feel like they did it really
well. That was very much the purpose of Civil War, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Civil War, the comic book, which was written as, whether Marvel acknowledged it or not, Bendis was writing that as an allegory for the United States post 9/11 and post Patriot Act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
Registration Act was very much a parallel for the Patriot Act in the United States. And while ostensibly he went in impartial and wanting you to take either side equally, his bias really showed through. And Iron Man and that the pro-registration side really came to represent his negative view of the Bush administration.
I agree with that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, the biggest difference between the movie and the comic books is that the movie was very consciously, as their objective, trying to make each side even and have you argue about it on the way out.
And I do think that, to be fair to Bendis and to Marvel for the comics, I think a good reason for that is because in reality, you know, we have a world that passed the Patriot Act.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a world where, like, the Patriot Act was not passed, and instead we have more freedoms than ever, and that had negative consequences. Maybe the story would have been different. Captain America would have been clearly the one who was naive, you know? So they were dealing with the world that we actually have, and in the credit of the Russo brothers is the focus on that story beyond anything else. And the reason why we're arguing about whose side are you on is because you're also arguing about whose side are you on in that personal fight.
Yes. It was all about the personal
friends
fight.
Versus friend versus responsibilities. Yeah. And
there was
I
no real
it.
Attempt to mirror the real world. It was all about focusing on these friends fighting.
Yeah.
Right. Now, speaking of friends fighting, if you enjoyed this podcast, tune into non-productive.com where we argue all the time.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, we were not going to wrap up this podcast.
Do we want to fight now?
I can fist fight him.
I'm ready to go.
I think we need to figure out who's on what team.
Yeah.
And no team Space Knight. No team Howard the Duck. Let's go straight to it.
All right.
Al?
Honestly, I'm Team Cap all the way on this one. I feel like I'm absolutely Team Cap on this one. I feel
why
like,
am I surprised? You believe that the UN had a bunch of standing armies go
no,
out.
Again, not what I meant at all. But
that's
fair.
Yeah.
We have to declare war on the moon, though.
We do. That damn moon.
But I feel like there's good points, and there's two good points that are brought up early on in the film about what Cap's problem is. Like, one, like, you're right. There's that whole scene where Wanda does that thing. And, like, what would happen if the UN sanctioned that and said, okay, go in there and pray? That would have literally have changed nothing that have happened right there. And Steve is totally right when he says, this does nothing but shift the blame. It says it takes responsibility out of our hands and puts it on the UN. Like, literally nothing would have changed if it's...
That's good. That's a good argument.
That's a great argument.
Those people would have died anyway.
We should have let Al talk earlier. That was good.
Yeah.
All right.
And the other thing...
Good memory, Al.
And the other thing he talks about how if they send us somewhere that we don't want to go, we have to go. Or if there's a situation and we want to go help them and they say we can't. Hmm. And the thing is, like, there, a lot of these situations are time sensitive, and the movie does a little bit of both proving and disproving Cap's point.
Like that 20-minute deleted scene of just UN resolutions failing to pass.
Yeah. I mean,
Martin Freeman killed in that scene.
I mean, in this universe, yeah. S.H.I.E.L.D. was like the military UN, essentially, and they were Hydra. So we do, in this universe, have a history of bad things.
Are you coming out as Team Cap then?
Well, I am Team Cap. I do disagree with a lot of things Cap said, and I think Tony has a good point. But I think Tony is mostly fueled by PTSD and panic at this point. And I think everything he's going to do from this point on is probably a mistake. And if you put me on on the airport, and I had... Airport, and I had some sort of superpower and wasn't running away... And I had to make a choice. I would probably fight for Cap because Iron Man isn't really doing the right things for the right reasons. And at the end of the day, I think he's going to make a lot more mistakes than Cap will.
Interesting. Cappy, how do you fall on this?
Cap all the way.
Is it just for the name? Just say yes.
Absolutely.
Oh, God. Big Papa Pete.
Well, you said no Rom and no Howard the Duck. So no. Can I come at as Team Darcy?
You can, but in lieu of Darcy, who do you go for?
If I have to pick somebody from this movie, Cap.
Really?
Cap. And that's all I'm going to say because I think I hear the black helicopters coming.
All right. No, I totally respect. Actually, think you guys made great arguments, and I'm glad I heard because I was
kind of. You thought the black helicopters was a good argument?
No.
No, everybody else. Okay. Yeah, it's good.
I think because, like, I had a little bit of issue out of the film, possibly because I went with somebody who was Team Cap all the way. And I'll say this, I'm Team Tony. I'm Team Iron Man in this film because I respect Captain America's fear. I respect his concerns potentially about what's going on. I also fear a world where might makes right, where I have to rely on the fact that Captain America's a good guy to not decide that I'm the one who gets to be punished. Mm. And we even talked about it in our description. What separates Wanda and Pietro from Zemo? Their backstories were effectively the same. Is it because Zemo went like super terrorist? Yeah, partially, but also because we considered these two heroes and this guy a villain, and it's just arbitrary. The Avengers are siding on one group of Hydra villains over the other. I'm very uncomfortable with power lying in the hands of the mighty and not of the people. I respect the concerns, but I wish that Captain America would have said, I'm not going to sign this accord unless these riders are added on and these clauses are put on. I want to stand up in front of the UN and argue my point and hopefully not get blown up by my best friend Bucky or the person masquerading as him. I want to see a Captain America who stands up and says, I am the icon. You guys respect me as an icon. Let me be this icon.
I completely
as
agree.
Opposed to being this rebel who's looking for my best friend from childhood.
And I absolutely agree with you that I don't like the pattern of might makes right. Mm. But I will also say that in the movie, they even showed that the UN has a habit of doing that themselves. When they put the kill order on Bucky immediately after the attacks without any investigation, based on a picture of him,
yeah,
he had a kill order on his head.
Yeah,
immediately.
He was also a terrorist at the time.
He spent decades being an actual assassin who has killed people for the Soviet Union.
I can see why they would do that,
but without any due process, even after he was captured.
Yeah, there was the thing of when they brought him in, Steve said, you know, he's going to get a lawyer, right? And the laughter, yeah, a lawyer. And that was clearly so he's the bad guy then.
They even said, like, he's not getting a trial.
Yeah.
There isn't going to be a trial.
They did establish that, which wasn't...
I'm comfortable with the nebulousness of this. Yeah. Which team are you on?
Yeah.
Because there's such an argument you can make for either side.
Right, right, mm-hmm. right. But if you enjoyed arguing for no apparent reason, why don't you subscribe to non-productive.com and you'll get juicy podcasts just like this one in your head directly through satellite. Mm. That's not a technology we have. Do not be
not
afraid.
Yet.
We
anyway.
Do not have that ability whatsoever.
Wait, we still brain. Have to deliver it with no, black helicopters. We
only if you have like a plate.
I
or
never
some
said
fillings.
That.
Why is it got to be a black helicopter?
Anyway,
good night, everybody.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.